Matt twisted in the saddle and looked back to the north for a second.
They're coming after us again! Whip up that team, Sam!
It's probably a trap!
Hell, I know that! But they're not giving us much choice, are they? Follow me!
The horse lunged toward the cut between the two bluffs. Matt drew his Winchester from the saddle sheath as he leaned forward in the saddle. Behind him, Sam slashed the long reins across the rumps of the mules.
Yeah, yeah!
The bulky animals hesitated, as mules were bound to do most of the time. But then they broke into a run, and the wagon lurched forward. Sam glanced back and saw that the outriders were putting up a good running fight against what appeared to be a half a dozen or so of the outlaws. That small number confirmed the thought that had flashed through his head as soon as the shooting started behind the wagon. With nowhere else to go, they were being driven straight toward that cut where the rest of the gang lurked, ready to ambush them. Sam had no doubt of that. Up ahead, Matt saw the wink of muzzle flashes from the slopes on both sides of the trail as he galloped toward them. The bushwhackers were hidden up there behind rocks and brush and any other cover they could find. Matt lifted the rifle to his shoulder. Matt didn't figure he would actually hit any of the outlaws, fire and blind like that, but he wanted to make them duck for cover and give them something to think about. The tactic worked, giving him a couple of seconds respite, and during that moment, Matt's horse, stretched out and running at top speed, dashed into the cut, which was about 50 yards long. The bushwhackers couldn't hit him now from where they were. Matt slowed his mount, but didn't wait for it to stop before he kicked his feet out of the stirrups and threw himself from the saddle. The slope was steep, but not sheer. Matt was able to scramble up it, carrying the rifle in his right hand and occasionally putting his left on the rocks for balance. The shooting was still going on. When Matt reached the top, he could see the wagon about 100 yards away, still careening toward the bluffs. He was relieved to see that Sam was still all right, as was Marshall Thorpe. Only two of the outriders were left, though, Matt noted grimly. The two surviving deputies had caught up to the wagon and were right behind it now, still turning in their saddles to fire back at the pursuing outlaws. Matt hurried forward and looked down the front slope of the bluff. From up here, he could see several of the bushwhackers as they crouched behind boulders to fire at the wagon. One of the outlaws was driven forward by the slug that slammed into his back. Before that man could fall, Matt had turned and homed in on another owl hoot. The outlaw dropped his rifle, slumped against the rock he had been using for cover, and started to slide down it as bloody froth from his bullet-torn lungs bubbled from his mouth. Now the rest of the bushwhackers on the slope knew Matt was behind them, and they whirled to start shooting at him instead of the wagon. Matt ran toward that gap now, hearing the pounding hoofbeats of the team as he approached it. He reached the edge and never slowed down as he saw the wagon flashing past about a dozen feet below him. Instead, he leaped into the air, sailing off from the bluff and trying to angle himself toward the wagon as he fell. Marshall Thorpe was shocked as Matt came crashing down on top of the wagon right behind him. Matt's momentum made him slide on across the vehicle. He grabbed at the edge with his free hand and dug in the toes of his boots to slow himself. He came to a stop just before he would have toppled off the far side of the wagon. Matt rolled over onto his belly and stretched out atop the wagon. He still had a couple of rounds left in the Winchester. The wagon burst out of the southern end of the gap. Behind the wagon on the slope, the bushwhackers who hadn't been cut down by Matt ran to the southern end and fired after the wagon. One of the outriders arched his back as a slug tore through him. Matt saw the man topple from the saddle. That meant only one of the nine men Thorpe had deputized was still with them. But the marshal had Matt and Sam siding him now, and it wasn't far to Pancake Flats. Matt didn't think the gang would follow them all the way into the settlement, but he couldn't be sure about that. The outlaws on horseback fell back, giving up the chase, and within minutes the wagon was out of range of the riflemen on the slopes. This latest attack had done some damage, but the wagon was still moving, and Joshua Shade was still locked up inside it.
Do you want to stop and check on Shade?
No, keep moving. We'll reach Pancake Flats soon, and we'll find out then if he's still alive.
Do you know when the next westbound train will be coming through Pancake Flats?
Tonight or tomorrow morning, I hope. The sooner we get Shade on a train rolling toward Yuma, the better.
Amen to that.
Matt sat up on top of the wagon. His hat had come off when he leaped from the bluff onto the vehicle, and now it hung behind his head by its chin strap. He tapped Sam's shoulder and pointed.
Hey, my horse!
The horse was trotting along the trail up ahead. When the wagon drew closer, Sam slowed the vehicle so that his blood brother could slide over the side and drop to the ground. Matt went to his mount and sheathed the rifle. Matt swung up into the saddle, lifted the reins, and rode out ahead of the wagon once more. The lone remaining guard trailed behind the wagon, his head swiveling on his neck as he checked their back trail frequently for any sign of the outlaws from Shade's gang. Now that this latest attempt to rescue Shade had failed, Sam's thoughts turned back to the conversation he'd been having with Marshall Thorpe just before the shooting started.
Marshall, doesn't it seem strange that you were ordered to deliver Shade to Yuma practically on your own?
That's my job.
Yes, but the odds against you being able to do it are high. And your boss had to know that.
I've gotten Shade this far, haven't I?
Yes, but you're still a long way from Yuma.
Not that far by train. It won't take more than half a day to get there once we board.
You've still got to get on board.
What's your point, Two Wolves?
I think something more is going on than just taking Shade to Yuma to be hanged. I haven't figured out what it is yet. But there has to be a reason the government wants things done this way.
You're seeing conspiracies where there aren't any. You're making it sound like the government wants Shade to get away.
A few minutes later, a patch of green appeared up ahead, an oasis of color in the mostly drab brown and tan landscape. The terrain had smoothed out so that it was as flat as could be. Thorpe nodded toward the vegetation.
That's got to be the settlement. There's a spring there, or so I've heard.
The sun was almost down. Night would fall quickly as soon as the blazing orb dropped below the horizon.
I just hope we don't have to spend much time there.
You and Bodine plan on going all the way to Yuma, eh?
We've come this far. I don't expect we'll turn back now.
What if I tell you I don't want you coming with me and Shade?
The railroads are public conveyances, Marshal. I'm not sure you can stop us.
I could have the local law lock you up.
But you're not going to do that, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm no fool, Two Wolves. I know I wouldn't have made it this far with Shade if not for the help I've gotten from you and Bodine. But don't forget who's in charge.
You won't, Marshal.
Willard Garth was at his wit's end. Twice he had led the men, his men, damn it, as long as Joshua Shade was a prisoner, against that blasted marshal in attacks that by all rights should have been successful. And twice those attacks had been beaten back, thanks in large part to the audacity and deadly gun handling of Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. Four more men had died during this latest fracas, leaving 14 members of the gang still alive. A few of those 14 had minor wounds, but nothing that would keep them out of the next fight. There would be a next fight, Garth vowed to himself, as the gang regrouped and the wounded men were tended to. He hadn't come this far, risked this much, just to let Shade be taken to Yuma and hanged. They would free him somehow. But the task had gotten more difficult now, and Garth knew it as he stared across the flat expanse to the spot where lights were beginning to be visible in the gathering shadows. That was the settlement where Thorpe planned to catch the train. There would be people around, and buildings where the lawman could hole up with his prisoner. Even worse, a westbound train might come through this evening, and Thorpe could get on it with Joshua. And if that happened, Garth would have to figure out some way to stop the train before it reached Yuma. He looked around and settled his gaze on one of his remaining men.
Hennessy, ride southeast and find a place to watch for a train before it gets to that settlement. You see one coming, you light a shuck back here to let us know, you hear?
The outlaw called Hennessy nodded. He mounted and rode off into the looming darkness. Jeffries walked up.
What now, Garth? Any ideas?
I thought I told you to keep an eye on the Pilgrim and his woman.
That sodbuster's not going anywhere. If you ask me, his skull's busted and he's gonna die before the night's over.
Damn it, hush that up. I want the woman hearing it.
Why not? Are you worried about upsetting her?
No. But if she thinks her husband's fixing to die, she might not cooperate with us.
She doesn't have any choice about that, now does she?
If she's gonna do what I want her to, we'll have to trust her. Can't trust her if we don't have her husband's life to hold over, along with the kids.
What are you thinking about, Garth?
You'll see.
Garth stalked over to where Winslow was now stretched out on the ground with his bloody head pillowed in his wife's lap.
She had ripped some strips from her petticoat and tied them around his head as makeshift bandages. Somewhere along the way, she had lost her bonnet, and her blonde hair had slipped out of its bun to hang loosely around her shoulders. Garth felt a pang of regret as she looked up at him with a stricken expression. He remembered a time when women this wholesome and pretty hadn't looked at him with fear in their eyes.
He won't wake up. I can't get him to wake up.
You'll be fine. I've seen plenty of fellows who got knocked addle-pated like he did. They just need some time to sleep it off. Then they wake up and they're all right again.
He needs a doctor.
No doctor. But we'll take good care of him. Got my word on that.
You won't let him die.
Not if I can help it. Not if you cooperate and do what I tell you.
Anything.
Her hands went to the top button of her dress and started to unfasten it, even though her fingers trembled.
You can do anything you want.
Not that. What I want you to do is ride down to the settlement and find out when the next train heading west is due to come through.
You want me to spy for you? Like when you sent Eichen to Arrowhead?
That's right. But that ain't all. We'll need to know exactly where Joshua's being held and how many deputies the marshal has.
Gonzalez was close enough to have been listening to the conversation.
I just saw one of the gringo deputies left, Garth. If you don't count that Bodine and two wolves.
You damn well better count them. From the looks of what they done so far, they're worth two or three good fighting men apiece.
I want to know about all of it. Can you do that?
I don't know. I guess I can try, but I'm worried about Ike.
Garth drew his bowie knife.
I can promise you one thing, lady. If you don't help us, that husband of yours won't live out the night.
All right, I'll do it. Are you going to give me a horse?
That's right. Don't even think about trying to double-cross us, ma'am. We'll have your husband and your baby. You won't never see either of them alive again if you try anything funny.
Don't worry, Mr. Garth. I'll find out what you need to know. And maybe by the time I get back, Ike will be awake again.
I reckon there's a good chance of it.
Pancake Flats was considerably smaller than Arrowhead, with only one real street that stretched for a couple of blocks north and south. It had something the larger settlement didn't, though, an adobe railroad station that fronted the tracks of the Southern Pacific. Matt glanced eastward along those tracks and thought that if you kept following them far enough, you'd wind up right back in Sweet Apple, Texas, where he and Sam had left weeks earlier. He wondered how their friend Marshal Seymour Standish was doing these days. To tell the truth, Matt wouldn't have minded if Seymour was here in Pancake Flats right about now. For a skinny Easterner, Seymour was pretty tough.
What do you mean the bridge is out?
Marshal Asa eyed the gent on the other side of the ticket window.
I have a prisoner I've got to get to Yuma.
Well, yes, I understand that, Marshal, but I can't do anything about it. That flash flood last week washed out the trestle over Bowtie Canyon, and it'll be another couple days before it's repaired enough to get the train over it. There's nothing we can do except wait.
The wagon with Joshua Shade locked up inside it was parked next to the station. Matt, Sam, and the remaining deputy, a man named Everett, stood around the vehicle with rifles in their hands. Thorpe had stomped up onto the platform and gone over to the window to find out when the next westbound was due. Now it had become crystal clear that there wouldn't be a train rolling into Pancake Flats for a couple of days at the very least, maybe longer. Thorpe's face was dark with anger in the lamplight that spilled through the ticket window onto the platform. He looked like he wanted to reach through the window, grab the unfortunate clerk by the throat, and squeeze a solution to the problem out of him. But there was no solution to be had. So Thorpe turned away from the window with a disgusted curse. He stopped and looked back.
You got any law around here?
Just a town marshal. His office is back up the street, half a block on your left.
Obliged.
Thorpe came down the steps.
Sounds like we're stuck here for a while.
Stuck is right. Sitting ducks, that's what we are.
I reckon we could follow the railroad tracks and keep going in the wagon.
That'd be even worse. There's only four of us now. We've already beaten the odds in fighting off those outlaws twice. I don't reckon we could do it again. We'll hold up and wait for the train. Find some nice sturdy place with walls thick enough to stop bullets.
Shouldn't be too hard. Most of the buildings around here are made of adobe. Their walls are pretty thick.
I saw a livery barn back up the street that looked like it'd stand up to anything short of a cannonball.
Let's talk to the local law first. Maybe he's got a good jail we can use.
Sam climbed onto the wagon seat again and untied the reins from the brake lever. He got the mules moving and followed Thorpe up the street toward the marshal's office. They hadn't noticed it as they went past earlier because there was no sign. But one of the citizens now pointed it out to Thorpe.
You won't find Marshal Lopez there right now, though. He'll be having his supper.
Whereabouts?
Over at the cantina.
The man pointed to a building on the other side of the street.
Stay here. Keep your eyes open.
Thorpe walked across the road and vanished into the cantina.
Yeah, my whistle could sure use a wetting.
I seem to recall you saying the same thing when we got to Arrowhead.
Well, it was true then, and it's true now. Nothing works up a man's thirst like trail dust and getting shot at.
Thorpe emerged from the cantina a minute later, followed by a short, round man in a shabby black suit and with a high-crowned sombrero. Judging by the federal lawman's long, angry strides that forced the smaller man to trot in order to keep up, Thorpe wasn't happy.
This is Marshal Lopez. He says we're welcome to use his office, but he doesn't have an actual jail.
Where do you lock up prisoners, then?
I try not to have to lock up anybody, senor. Pancake Flats is a peaceful place. About the worst trouble we get is a cowboy who's had too much to drink now and then. When that happens, I clout him over the head, toss him in a barn, and let him sleep it off.
That barn?
Sam pointed to the livery stable. It was a low, rambling adobe building with a slate roof.
Si, senor.
We can bar the doors. Looks like there are only a couple of windows so we can trade off stand and watch. As much as we've whittled down Shade's gang, maybe they won't want to come right into town to try to take him back.
It seems to be our best bet, Marshal.
I realize that. The livery stable it is, then. If there's trouble, can we count on you and the townspeople to lend us a hand?
Most of the folks around here are peace-loving hombres. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. It appears that we're on our own until that train comes through.
Why should this be any different?
Maggie Winslow couldn't breathe because her heart had crept right up into her throat and lodged there, choking her. That was what it felt like anyway, as she rode into Pancake Flats not long after dark. Her face burned with shame because she had to ride astride, with her skirt pulled up over her calves. It had been bad enough when she was forced to ride like that in front of the leering outlaw called Jeffries, whom she hated because of the way his arm had pressed up against the underside of her breasts and because of the vile things he had whispered in her ear when no one else could hear. This was worse, though, because now decent people would witness her shame instead of just a bunch of terrible outlaws. And, of course, she was worried about Ike and Caleb. Having to ride away and leave her husband and son in the clutches of those beasts was like having part of her soul ripped away. But the only possible way to save them was to do what Garth told her, no matter how ashamed or frightened she was. She had been prepared to give her body to the outlaws if she had to. Surely she could act as a spy for them. She spotted the closed-in wagon Garth had told her to look for. It was being pulled into what appeared to be a large livery barn. Two men shoved the door shut behind it. Maggie nudged her horse forward again. She headed for the railroad station at the far end of the street. Garth wanted to know when the next westbound train was due to arrive. Maggie figured that information would be chalked onto the board next to the ticket window. If not, she could ask the clerk. Before she could reach the station, however, four men emerged from a building with a sign fastened to it that simply read, Saloon, and began to cross the street in front of her.
Hey, fellas! Look what we got here!
Please let me pass.
Oh, you won't ride off just yet, sweetie. We just met.
We haven't been introduced.
That's right, we haven't. My name's Dub. What's yours?
Please, I have business to attend to.
You're a working girl, are you?
Of course not. I just need to go down to the railroad station.
You can't be leaving already. You just got here. I seen you riding down the street. Why don't you come on back in the saloon and have a drink with us? We sure admire to spend some time in your company, wouldn't we, boys?
We sure would.
No, let me go!
Oh, you don't want to be standoffish like that. Just be friendly to us. We'll let you go in a little while.
You'll let her go now.
They would need supplies if they were going to stay holed up in the livery barn until the trestle was repaired and the train could reach Pancake Flats. They still had some jerky left from the trip, but it wouldn't last long. There was the matter of fresh water, too. Matt had volunteered to slip out the back and fetch everything they needed, while the other three stayed there to guard Joshua Shade. Thorpe had already unlocked the wagon to check on the prisoner, and found him as loco and filled with hate as ever. and locked it up again.
Are you sure you'll be all right? I could come with you.
That would leave just the Marshal and Everett here. I'll be fine.
Earlier, he had noticed a general store that appeared to be open despite the hour. Hoping that it still was, Matt circled the barn and came out onto the street. Matt glanced one way toward the general store and was pleased to see that its windows were still lit up. Matt saw four cowboys blocking the path of a young woman on horseback. She seemed scared as she tried to pull her mount away from the men, but one of the cowboys had hold of the horse's harness. She was young and pretty, Matt couldn't help noticing, with pale blonde hair hanging loose around her shoulders. But that didn't matter. He would have done the same if she had been old and gray and wrinkled. Where Matt came from, men didn't mistreat women.
You let her go now.
The woman glanced over her shoulder at him, and Matt saw that her eyes were wide with fear.
Don't worry, ma'am. These gents won't bother you anymore.
You're talking mighty big, considering there's one of you and four of us.
The way I see it, I've got you outnumbered.
How the hell you figure that?
One man counts for more than four polecats, at least where I come from.
Why, you son of a...
Watch your language, amigo. There's a lady present.
All right, mister. You wanted trouble, you got it. You don't know who you're messing with here.
A drunk, from the looks of it. Why don't you just go with your friends and find some place to sleep it off? That way nobody has to get hurt.
It's too late for that. My name's Dub Branch, and I'm the slickest draw in these parts. What do they call you? I'd like to know who I'm about to kill.
Dub? Maybe you'd better think twice about this. That fella don't look like he's got much backup in him.
That's right. The good Lord plumb left it out of me. And by the way, the name's Bodine. Matt Bodine.
The eyes of all four cowboys widened in surprise, as did the eyes of the young woman, who still hadn't moved on. Matt didn't want any gunplay to start while she was still close by, so this was one time he was hoping that his reputation would be enough to make a potential opponent decide not to fight after all.
Hell, anybody can call himself Matt Bodine. We don't know that you're really him.
Dub, I heard about Bodine. This fella matches the description. And look at those two irons he packed. He's a gunslinger, all right.
Oh, he's all for show. I'm gonna prove it right now. Any of you boys with me?
I'll back you play, Dub.
Matt glanced at him, saw that he wasn't as drunk as the others, and the man had a certain cool fatalism in his eyes that marked him as a dangerous hombre. If Matt had to take both of them, he'd go for the other man first, then Branch. Branch moved to one side while Court went the other way, spreading out so that Matt would have a harder time getting lead in both of them before one of them dropped him. That was their plan, anyway.
Get him!
The right-hand gun roared, sending a bullet into Court's chest. Matt held his fire with the left-hand gun, which was lined up on Branch's shirt pocket. Branch's Colt was only halfway out of the holster.
Let it slide, Dub. Let it slide and you won't have to die tonight.
You bastard!
Look out!
Matt had already seen Court regain his balance and swing up the gun he still held. From the size of the pool of blood forming around Branch's head, Matt knew the reckless cowboy wasn't a threat anymore. He looked at the remaining two punchers, who seemed cold sober now, shocked out of their drunken haze by the deaths of Branch and Court.
You fellas want to take a hand in this game?
Both men practically broke their necks, shaking their heads so hard as they backed away. They held up empty hands.
No, sir. Mr. Bodine?
When the Marshal asks you about this, you'll tell him the truth about what happened, won't you?
Yes, sir. You don't have to worry about that. Dub and Court were damn fools. That's what happened.
Best go fetch the Undertaker, then, if this burg's got one.
The two surviving cowboys hustled away up the street. Matt looked up and saw that the young woman was still sitting there on her horse. She wore a long gingham dress, not the sort of outfit that was suitable for riding.
You're Matt Bodine.
Yes, ma'am. You've got the advantage of me.
My name is Jessica Devlin.
I wish we'd met under better circumstances, Miss Devlin.
Yes, so do I. But I thank you for your help. I have to go now.
Ma'am?
Maggie turned her horse and kicked it into a trot that carried her toward the railroad station. Matt watched until she got there safely and dismounted, then turned toward the general store again. He still had to pick up those supplies and get back to the barn. Sam was probably wondering what those shots had been about, and knowing Sam, he just assumed that Matt had been mixed up in the fracas. Maggie's heart wasn't choking her anymore, but it still pounded a mile a minute in her chest. She had heard the outlaws talking about Matt Bodine, about what a deadly gunman he was, and now she had seen the proof of that with her own eyes. If she hadn't witnessed it, she wouldn't have believed that a man could draw and fire even one pistol that fast and with such accuracy, let alone two. And Bodine's companion, the half-breed called Two Wolves, was supposed to be almost as good with a gun, according to the outlaws. Maggie glanced up the street as she dismounted by the train station. Matt Bodine still stood there, obviously keeping an eye on her to make sure no one else bothered her. She started to lift a hand and wave to him to let him know that she was all right, but she didn't do it. She didn't want to be friendly toward him. It was bad enough that she was helping Shade's gang after he had risked his life to keep those cowboys from molesting her. What she was doing now might allow the outlaws to kill him later on. She had no choice, though. Not as long as they had Ike and Caleb in their power. Pausing at the top of the steps leading to the station platform, Maggie glanced up the street again. Bodine was gone. She felt oddly relieved. The ticket window was still open.
What can I do for you, ma'am?
I need to know when the next westbound train will arrive, please.
I don't have any passengers heading west for a week at a time, or sometimes even more, and now there's all sorts of folks wanting to catch a train going in that direction.
Someone else wanted to know about the westbound?
That's right, a deputy U.S. Marshal of all things. He didn't give me any details, but I reckon he must have a prisoner he's got to deliver from the looks of the wagon he had with him.
What about the train?
I'll tell you the same thing that I told the lawman, Missy. There won't be no westbound train through here, nor eastbound neither, until the work crews get through repairing the trestle over Bowtie Canyon. That's going to be another couple days at least.
No train?
That's right, no train. When I hear any different, I'll put the news on the chalkboard. Now, would you like to buy a ticket for when the train does run?
What? Oh, no, thank you.
Well, good night then.
Maggie didn't know how Garth, Jeffries, and the other outlaws would take this news, but there was no doubt in her mind that she would go back and pass it along to them, as Garth had instructed her to do. Maggie went back to her horse, swung up into the saddle without worrying now about riding astride so that her calves were exposed, and sent the horse back up the street at a fast trot. As she passed the general store, Matt Bodine was stepping out of the establishment. He raised a hand to wave at her, but she didn't acknowledge him. She didn't have time to stop and chat, and anyway, as long as her husband and son were prisoners, Bodine was one of the enemy. She didn't look back as she rode out of town, heading north.
Now, that was mighty funny.
Matt watched Jessica Devlin, if that was her real name, leaving Pancake Flats. She had ridden into the settlement, not wearing riding clothes, gone to the train station, spent a few minutes there, then mounted up and ridden right back out of town. From the looks of it, she had come to find out the train schedule. Matt couldn't think of any other reason why she would have stopped at the depot. The clerk must have told her about the trestle being out.
Well, none of my business.
Carrying the bag of supplies he had picked up at the store in his left arm so that his right hand was free in case he needed to slap leather, Matt headed back to the livery barn. He went around back and kicked the door.
It's me, Sam.
In the dim light of the lantern that had been lit earlier, Matt saw Sam and Everett flanking the door, each of them holding a Winchester.
I heard those gunshots and wondered if they had anything to do with you. I figured the chances were they did.
I knew that's what you'd think. But you'd have done the same thing, Sam. They'd been drinking, and they would have molested the gal if I hadn't come along.
What gal?
I don't know. Somebody from around here, I guess. She told me her name was Jessica Devlin. But it didn't mean anything to me.
Matt and Sam looked at Everett, who was from around the area.
Me either. I don't know everybody in these parts, but I don't recollect any Devlins hereabouts.
I'll bet she was young and pretty, wasn't she?
Well, now that you mention it.
You walk a fine line, Bodine. All you gunslingers do. If it was up to me, I'd disarm the lot of you so you couldn't go around killing each other.
Not in our lifetime, Marshal. And if something like that ever happened, I might just have to hunt me a new place to live, because this sure wouldn't be the same country I grew up in.
Just try to stay out of trouble the rest of the time we're here.
Sure, Marshal.
A mile north of town, Maggie Winslow was riding along when several dark shapes suddenly appeared out of the shadows around her.
Take it easy, girl. What'd you find out? Is there a train coming in tonight?
First, tell me about Ike and Caleb. Are they all right?
Sure they are. Tyke's sound asleep.
What about Ike? Is he awake?
Not yet. I'm sure he's gonna be fine, though. Like I told you, when a fella gets walloped on the head like that, he needs some time to sleep it off.
There won't be a train. Not tonight, and probably not tomorrow either. A flash flood washed out a trestle east of here at a place called Bowtie Canyon. The trains aren't running in either direction until it gets repaired.
One of the other men who met her was Gonzalez, who seemed to be at Garth's side most of the time. Maggie suspected that was because the Mexican was ambitious and was watching for a chance to take over the gang. Jeffries was the same way.
That's lucky for us, no? Gives us more time to figure out a way to get the Reverend away from them.
Where are they holding Joshua? Local jail?
No, I saw the wagon they have him in. They were taking it into a barn, probably the local livery stable.
Are you sure they weren't just putting it away after locking up Joshua somewhere else?
I don't think so. The door in the back was still locked. I saw the padlock, and it was fastened. And the way the marshal and the other men were watching, they were still on guard. To tell you the truth, I didn't see a jail, and I looked up and down both sides of the only street.
So the place is too small to have a jail. They're forting up inside the livery instead. That ain't a bad idea. What's the building made of?
Adobe.
What about the roof?
I'm not sure. Some sort of tile.
So it can't burn them out very easy.
How many windows does the place have?
I don't know, but not many. I didn't see any on the front, and maybe one or two on the sides.
Mm-hmm. So they can cover them all. If we rush the place, we're going to lose a lot of men, especially with Bodine and Two Wolves in there. We'll have to think of some other way to flush them out in the open. At least we got a little bit of time.
Garth reached toward her. Maggie flinched, but Garth just took hold of her wrist, pulled her hand toward him, and pressed something into her palm. She felt the crinkle of money.
Right on back to town. Find a hotel or a boarding house or some such place to stay. Keep your eyes and ears open. And if you hear anything about a train coming, you hightail it out here and let us know.
How will I find you?
Don't worry about that. We'll be keeping an eye on you. And if you start in this direction, we'll know it.
What about Ike and Caleb?
We'll look after them.
No. Not unless you let me take Caleb with me.
I see.
I want my son with me.
The Nino's kind of a handful, Garth. We still got the husband to make sure she don't try to trick us.
I reckon you forgot who's giving the orders here.
I'm just saying that if you want me to cooperate and help you, you have to give me what I want too.
I could just shoot all three of you and be done with it.
And then you wouldn't have anyone to spy for you. I suppose one of you could ride into town and handle that chore. But you can't be sure that Bodine or one of the others won't spot you. They don't know me, though.
How about if I go ahead and just kill your husband right now? Gonzalez, go kill him if the lady doesn't get on her horse and ride.
No, please! I'll go, just please don't hurt Ike or my son.
Yeah, don't worry.
The rest of the night passed quietly in the livery barn. After they gave Shade his supper, he ranted and raved some inside the wagon, but eventually he dozed off. Matt, Sam, Thorpe, and Everett took turns sleeping, with at least two of them always awake and alert. After breakfast the next morning, Thorpe went to Matt.
Go down to the train station and find out if that clerk's heard any more about when the trestle will be repaired. If he hasn't, tell him to come up here and let us know as soon as he does hear anything.
Pancake Flats wasn't any more exciting this morning than it had been the night before, Matt noted, as he walked toward the depot. Probably the only time the place really woke up was when a train came through.
Bodine!
Matt swung around, instinctively bringing up the rifle and dropping into a crouch. His finger eased on the trigger when he saw the portly figure of the local lawman.
No, don't shoot, Bodine! I didn't mean to spook you.
What do you want, Marshal?
I heard about what happened last night with Dub Branch and Court Wellesley. I mean, those hombres were good with their guns.
Well, not good enough. You're not thinking about trying to arrest me, are you, Marshal?
No, no. Their amigos told me what happened. How Dub and Court were drunk and Dub tried to molest some woman. They said you gave him a chance to go on with nobody getting hurt, but they slapped leather first.
Well, that's the way it happened, all right.
I just thought I should warn you. Even though you're in the clear with the law, those boys had some hot-headed friends around here who might not see it that way. I ain't saying they'll come after you, but just when were you planning on leaving?
Well, that all depends on when the train comes through. I was on my way to the station to check on that now.
Well, the sooner the better, I'm thinking.
Sooner will be fine with us, too, but it's sort of out of our hands. We have to wait for that railroad repair crew to do its part.
I'll walk with you, if that's all right.
Suit yourself, Marshal. You know a young woman named Jessica Devlin?
Devlin? I don't think so. No Devlins around here, as far as I know.
She's blonde, early 20s, easy to look at.
Still don't ring no bells. Sorry, Bodine. Was she the woman Dub and Court were bothering?
That's right.
It must be new in town. Although, why a young, pretty woman would choose to come to a dusty, no-account place like this, I don't know.
The same clerk was on duty at the ticket window, and when he saw Matt coming, he started shaking his head.
Sorry, there hasn't been any word this morning about the trestle.
Well, if you hear anything, the marshal wants you to come up to the livery stable and let us know.
Is that true, Marshal?
He means the other marshal, the U.S. one. But I reckon it'd be a good idea if you do like he says, Harry.
All right, as long as it doesn't interfere with my duties here. I work for the Southern Pacific Railroad, you know, not the U.S. Marshal's office.
With that chore taken care of, Matt headed back to the livery stable. Sam led him in the back door, and he reported the bad news, or rather, the lack of news, which was pretty much the same thing.
So we're still stuck here.
Thorpe glanced at the wagon where Shade was quiet this morning.
If I wasn't a lawman, I'd open that door and put a bullet in that monster's head. That would settle things. The longer it takes us to get him to Yuma, the greater the chances of him escaping justice somehow.
It'll catch up to him sooner or later, no matter what happens here.
In the next world, you mean? I don't know what happens there to wolves. All I know for sure is what happens here and now. And the law says Shade's got to hang.
You know, sometimes prisoners get shot trying to escape.
You wouldn't solve the problem that way, though, would you, Bodine?
I reckon not. Not unless Shade was really getting away. Then I wouldn't hesitate.
Maybe it won't come to that. Maybe the trestle will be repaired and the train will be here later today.
They all hoped that was true. But the worried looks on their faces said that they would believe it when they saw it with their own eyes. Time passed slowly as the men waited for word of the train. It was late afternoon, and they had still heard not a word. Instantly, the four men inside the barn were fully alert and ready for trouble. Holding the shotgun poised in his hands, Marshal Thorpe went to the doors.
Who's there?
It's Lopez. Open up. I got to talk to you.
Thorpe looked at Everett.
Get over there by the wagon. If anybody busts in here, stick a six gun through the window and empty it. I'd rather see Shade hang, but they're not taking him out of here.
Everett didn't look like he relished being given the job of executioner, but he drew his pistol and held it ready. Matt and Sam spread out, one on each side of the doorway, and leveled their rifles.
Are you alone, Lopez?
Si, Marshal. You have my word.
Anything you want to tell us, you can do it through the door. Is the train coming?
Not yet. Tomorrow, maybe, Harry says. But this is about something else. More trouble.
Just what we needed.
Go on.
The word's gotten around town that you got Joshua Shade locked up in there. Some folks are getting worked up about the reward.
Reward? There's no more reward. Shade's already been convicted and sentenced to hang.
That's what I mean. Somebody started a rumor that Shade's gang will pay $1,000 to anybody who kills you four and sets him free.
Someone from the gang must have slipped into town unnoticed and started spreading that rumor.
They're tired of getting shot up, so they're trying to bribe somebody else into doing their dirty work for them.
Thorpe nodded in agreement with the theory.
What are you going to do about this?
Me? I can't do anything. Some of the cowboys in the saloon were already getting liquored up because they were mad about Bodine shooting Dub in court. I told you it was maybe gonna happen, Bodine.
It's your job to put a stop to it.
I can't stop a whole mob of local cowboys. And now it's just gonna be worse because of that bounty the gang put on your heads. Oh, I'm sorry, amigos, but the town don't pay me enough to get my ass shot off. I'm riding out.
You're just gonna leave and let all hell break loose?
I got no choice. I got a family, a wife, a bunch of kids. If I'm dead, who's going to take care of them?
Let him go, Marshal. I don't think he'd be much help anyway, even if he stayed and tried to stop the mob.
Yeah, I guess you're right. All right, Lopez, run out on us if that's what you want to do. Keep running long enough and far enough, and maybe you can forget what you did here.
Oh, you can shame me all you want, mister. At least I'll be alive to feel ashamed.
Every time a thing thinks can't get any worse, they find a way, don't they? Now probably half the town wants to kill us, and the other half will be too scared to do anything about it.
If we stay here, they'll bust down the door and get in. We can't hold off that many men forever, or even for as long as it takes that damn train to get here.
Well, it seems like there's only one solution.
The others all looked at him and waited for him to go on.
We don't stay here.
Garth thought it was a good idea, and for once, Jeffries and Gonzalez seemed to agree with him. Not that he really cared what they thought, but they had wormed their way into being his lieutenants, sort of, and he knew things would go better if they supported what he wanted to do. Maggie Winslow had ridden out in the middle of the day, bringing the news that the trestle still wasn't repaired, but might be by the next morning.
The clerk at the depot said the train might be here by 9 or 10 o'clock. Now can I see my husband and son?
Ike Winslow had surprised Garth by living through the night. In fact, even though he still hadn't woken up, he seemed to be breathing easier and some of the color had come back into his face. The hombre might actually live, since they might have only a day, maybe even less, before the train arrived to take Joshua on to Yuma. They had to act fast, but an open attack on the livery stable where the prisoner was being held would just result in more men lost, and the numbers had already shrunk a lot more than Garth liked. Also, if they came riding into town with guns blazing, there was no telling how the citizens would react. Chances were most of them would hunt for cover and lie low until the shooting was over. But some of them might get brave and join the fight. That could result in disaster, too. Garth knew one thing he could always count on, though. Greed. So when he told Jeffries and Gonzalez what he wanted to do, they had thought it over and nodded.
Who are we going to send into town? You can't use the girl for that.
No, I reckon it'll have to be one of us.
Garth looked at Gonzalez.
Think about sending you. Close enough to the border that nobody's going to notice one more greaser in town.
I can go to the saloon and tell the hombres there that somebody offered me a bounty if I help bust into the livery stable. I can pretend that I turned it down.
You really think that folks will be willing to help free Joshua when just about everybody in the territory is afraid of him?
Make the money high enough and they will. I was thinking about offering $1,000.
That's a lot of dinero, all right.
Of course, we won't actually pay it. When Joshua's free, we'll loot the town like always. Sound like a good plan?
It does.
Head on into town, Gonzalez. Remember, though, you're not an owl hoot. You're just a drifting vaquero.
See, I can do that.
Gonzalez rode off, and Garth turned to the place in the shade of a cutback where Winslow was stretched out with his wife and baby now beside him. Maggie held the little one like she never intended to let him go.
All right, you seen him. Better get on back to town so you can keep an eye on things for us.
Please, just a little while longer. I've done everything you told me to do, haven't I?
Yeah, you've been pretty good about it. But something could happen this afternoon we need to know about. Come on now, you gotta go.
Maggie leaned over to kiss her unconscious husband on the forehead and gave the young'un another hug. Then she stood up and handed him to Garth, taking the outlaw by surprise. Garth hung on to the kid, frowning.
Take care of both of them. If you don't...
There's bound to be a flag stop somewhere west of here. If we can get Shade out of here tonight without anybody knowing it, we can flag down the train when it comes through there tomorrow and board it there.
We can't move him in that wagon without folks seeing it.
We won't use the wagon, unless it's a part of a distraction so folks won't know what we're doing.
We can put him on horseback, stage some sort of a ruckus to keep the town occupied and slip Shade out of here while that's going on.
Do you know how loco this sounds?
We've been accused of being a mite touched in the head before.
But we're still here when a lot of hombres have tried to put us in the ground.
All right, I'll listen, but I'm not making any promises about whether or not we'll actually do it.
First of all, we need to find out more about the railroad. We have to make sure the train will really be coming through tomorrow, and we better find out exactly where the next flag stop is.
I can do that. It's starting to get dark outside. I'll head down to the depot and try to make sure not too many people see me.
All right, but don't be gone long, and be thinking about what we can do to throw everybody off the trail.
Matt slipped out the back door. From what Lopez had said, the cowboys who had a grudge against him for shooting Dub in court were drinking in the saloon, stocking up on liquid courage. Their grudge against him, plus the bounty that had been placed on his head and the heads of those with him, would be enough to make the mob storm the livery stable, Matt knew, but it would probably take them at least a couple of hours to work themselves up to actually doing it. That gave them a little time, Matt thought, to figure out what they were going to do. But they couldn't afford to waste any time, either. As he swung around the corner of the depot and headed for the platform steps, he came to a sudden stop as he almost ran into someone leaving. A grin creased Matt's face as he recognized Jessica Devlin.
Well, good evening, Miss Devlin. Checking to see when the trains are going to be running again?
That's right. Is that why you're here, Mr. Bodine?
Yep. You probably heard around town that some fellas and I are waiting to catch the westbound. We're helping out a federal marshal who's got a prisoner to deliver to Yuma Prison.
Yes, I've heard. Some sort of outlaw, isn't he?
Yeah, the worst sort. He's a loco killer, a pure dehydrophobia skunk. And his gang is just as bad.
I wouldn't want to cross paths with them, then.
No, ma'am, you sure wouldn't. I'll be seeing you.
Matt started toward the steps again. He had to get on with the errand that had brought him here. He couldn't help but glance at Jessica Devlin again, though. She definitely had a troubled look about her, and he wanted to do something to give her a hand if he could. Unfortunately, he and Sam already had too much on their plates to be taking on any more problems. Matt hoped that whatever was bothering Jessica Devlin, she could figure it out for herself.
Good news, Mr. Bodine. I just got a wire saying that the repair work on the trestle is finished. The trains will be running again first thing in the morning. I expect the westbound to come through at 8:30. That's even earlier than I'd hoped for.
Thanks. I got another question.
Of course.
How far is it to the nearest flag stop west of here?
Why do you want to know that?
Marshal Thorpe wanted to know. In fact, he wants a map of all the stops between here and Yuma, if you got one.
I do, but it's the property of the Southern Pacific Railroad.
I'll see that you get it back.
All right, here. You can let the marshal look at it. I need it back before you leave town, though.
Sure.
Matt hurried back toward the livery stable. As he glanced up the street, Matt saw light spilling out of the saloon. The mob was forming inside, and soon would spill out into the street like the light from the saloon's lamps. Their goal would be the livery stable, where they hoped to collect that $1,000 bounty and Matt Bodine's blood to boot. Matt hoped that Sam had come up with something that would work, because he was sure as hell drawing a blank. By the time Matt got back to the stable with the good news about the trestle and the railroad map, Sam had had an idea. Matt spread out the map first, though, and the rest of them gathered around to look.
There's a water stop 20 miles west of here. It's even better than a flag stop, because there's no chance the engineer will miss it.
I'm starting to think this might work, but how do we get Shade out of here?
He'll go on horseback.
He'll have to be tied up mighty damn tight.
That goes without saying, Marshal. And he'll have you and Everett guarding him.
What about us? And what about that distraction you were talking about?
That's going to be our job.
Let me guess. It means we'll be the ones getting shot at, right?
If all goes according to plan, we're going to take the wagon and make the mob think that we're headed to Bowtie Canyon so we can stop the train and get on there.
But the wagon will be empty.
That's right. Matt and I will bust out of here with guns blazing and head east, drawing the mob after us. That's when you and Everett will take Shade the other way on horseback. We'll rendezvous with you later at the water stop west of here.
If you don't get shot full of holes.
Well, yeah, there's that chance. But there are no guarantees in life, are there?
Just that we'll wind up getting shot at too damn often.
All right, we'll give it a try. For the life of me, I don't see anything else we can do. When will we get started?
Like the saloon girl said to the padre, it won't be long now.
With no time to waste, Matt and Sam had gone over to the wagon as soon as they decided on the plan with Thorpe and Everett. They stood behind the wagon with their rifles trained on the door as the marshal unlocked it.
Come on out of there, Shade.
Shade got his fingers fastened around Thorpe's windpipe. Matt stepped up and brought the butt of his Winchester crashing down on Shade's head.
Get this crazy foul-smelling bastard off me! He's like a wild animal that's been caged. I'd almost feel sorry for him if he wasn't responsible for the deaths of probably 100 innocent people, maybe more. Get him on a horse.
Matt and Sam lifted Shade into the saddle of one of the extra horses they had gotten ready to ride earlier. Then Everett held the unconscious man in place while Matt and Sam tied him.
He's not going anywhere, at least not without that horse.
Bodine! Matt Bodine, you hear me?
Matt didn't answer. He hurried to the horses and tied Sam's mount, along with a couple of others, to the back of the wagon while Sam was climbing onto the driver's seat. The mules were already hitched up, so all he had to do was turn the team and the wagon around. He did that while Thorpe and Everett blew out the lanterns and hurried to their own horses.
Bodine, if you and your friends let the prisoner go, we won't kill you. We don't want any bloodshed.
That's a damn lie. The way they're liquored up, somebody's bound to let off a shot, and that's all it'll take.
Yes, it would be quite a bloodbath if it went the way they think it's going to.
Everett held the reins of Shade's horse while Thorpe went over to the double doors.
This is Deputy U.S. Marshal Asa Thorpe. Hold your fire. We're coming out.
All right, Marshal. Come on out. There won't be no shooting.
Barely visible in the gloom, Thorpe nodded to Matt and Sam. Then he flung the bar up, unfastening the doors. Yeah! Thorpe whirled his horse and dashed back along the barn's center aisle, joining Everett and Shade in the deep shadows at the rear. Matt crashed out first, Winchester in hand. Matt fired over the heads of the startled crowd. Sam swung the wagon in a sharp turn toward the railroad station. The horses tied on at the back had to gallop along with the vehicle, and they caused members of the mob to scramble out of the way to avoid being trampled too.
Stop them! Stop that wagon!
As Matt pounded down the street at a hard gallop, he glanced to his left and saw the town's lone hotel looming there. Someone stood at the front window, peering out with a wide-eyed, worried expression. And Matt felt a second of recognition as he realized the watcher was Jessica Devlin. There was no time to acknowledge her, though. Matt flashed on past the hotel with the wagon careening behind him. He glanced over his shoulder, saw that Sam was staying low on the driver's seat.
Stop shooting! Stop shooting! Shade's worth $1,000 alive! Get your horses! Let's get after them!
Matt wasn't too worried about pursuit, though. All he and Sam had to do was stay in front of anyone who came after them for a couple of miles. Then they could abandon the empty wagon and ride off into the night. Thorpe and Everett would have a big enough lead then that they could reach the water stop west of town before anyone figured out what was going on. Even when the cowboys found the empty wagon, if they did, they wouldn't know where Shade had gone. Guns were still going off behind them as they left Pancake Flats behind. Matt figured several of the cowboys had been able to grab their horses and give chase fairly quickly. None of the bullets came close, as far as Matt could tell. More than likely, the cowboys chasing them were blazing away with six guns, and they weren't going to hit anything at that range, unless it was by pure luck. Every so often, Matt stopped and threw a few shots behind them with his Winchester. Sam continued to follow the railroad tracks toward Bowtie Canyon. The pursuit fell farther and farther back.
Whoa! Whoa!
Matt reined in as well and swung down from the saddle to untie Sam's horse from the back of the wagon while Sam was climbing down from the driver's seat. He untied the spare horses as well.
Let's get out of here.
Leading the extra horses, Matt and Sam rode carefully across the railroad tracks, then headed south toward the border. They didn't intend to go as far as Mexico, however. After a mile or so, they turned west, paralleling the Southern Pacific right-of-way. There were no more shots. The Blood Brothers figured that the cowboys who had chased them from Pancake Flats would find the wagon and realize they'd been tricked when they discovered the vehicle was empty. By then, it would be too late. They wouldn't be able to track Matt and Sam by starlight, and they'd have no idea where Joshua Shade really was. All Matt and Sam had to do now was reach the water stop, rendezvous with Thorpe and Everett, and hope that nobody figured out where they were before the train came through in the morning. It was pretty simple. But there was still a lot that could go wrong between now and then.